Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Said we would head out to Las Vegas. We're going to do that right now. Bring in Adam Hill, who is a part of afternoon show out there, ESPN Las Vegas. Adam, how you doing?
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
Yeah, thanks for joining us. We saw over the weekend that your market and the Las Vegas Strip is back open, which is a nice sight to see. How has that been thus far as you guys are trying to open things back up?
Yeah, it's weird, man. I think a lot of places were very hesitant about opening up. I thought they were like, okay, we're going to open the doors, but how many people are really going to be here? How many people are going to, be interested in coming back to Las Vegas? And I think you saw, there was definitely a video from Arash Markazi of the LA Times, a good friend of mine who was kind of showing what the Cosmo was like. The Cosmopolitan on the middle of the Strip was packed. It was like a normal, summer weekend here in Las Vegas, and it was crazy. I don't think that was the case everywhere. I mean, if you're out and about at some of the local spots, it definitely wasn't like that. And some of the other places on the Strip were a little bit slow to come back, and not everything's open yet. There's, a couple malls on the Strip that aren't open, and not all the properties are open. So I think that kind of packs the people into the places a little bit more, but I think definitely the places that did open were pretty happy that they did and pretty happy with the business that they did. People locally are just kind of wondering, what is this going to mean in a couple weeks? Like, are we going to be okay? Is it going to be, letting the world back into Las Vegas and everything that comes with that? Or is it going to be a little bit, a little bit better than people were hoping? And, a lot of the safety measures that are put in place work and everybody's okay. So I think there's just kind of a waiting game right now of, okay, it's cool, we're open, we're very happy to get the economy going again, very happy to have people back at work, but what is this going to do? What are the repercussions? And we won't find that out for a while, but right now people are cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, I watched the video several times, and it was a nice sight to see, and I wanted to see exactly what the lay of the land looked like. One, there was, like you said, I was like, whoa, there's a lot of people. And then I kind of wanted to examine the room, and I saw where it looked like all the employees were wearing masks, some of them even with gloves. But I got to be honest, Adam, it was alarming to see. I mean, I watched the video many times, and boy, it was hard to find patrons with masks on.
It was. And listen, like, that is absolutely a tourist spot. Like, there's no question that that's a place where it's a vast majority of tourists. It's a little bit better. I mean, however you want to phrase it, it's the ratio of people with masks in terms of the patrons is better at the local spots. I'm not going to say it's much better. I'd say you're in like the 30-40% range of customers who are wearing masks. Like on the Strip, it seemed like it was almost zero. And I guess it would make sense of, hey, if you're going to risk coming to Las Vegas, if you're a tourist and you're coming into town, I'm guessing you're probably in that, percentage of people that are like, who cares, let's go. But yeah, it's alarming because, listen, we do so. It's all the people that are working there are local. They have to go back to their families and they have to go back to, the community. And so whatever, is coming into town is now going to be a part of the community. You would think. So it's concerning. But at the same time, like, I know that people are very, very happy to be back to work, and I get that. I will not be going to the Strip anytime soon. That's a guarantee. I can promise you that. But, I'm happy for those that want to be at work and are happy to be back at work. It's just, it's such a tough, a tough situation for everybody to be in. I get all that. But I just choose not to be a part of it right now. Fairly soon, we'll see. I mean, we'll find out what the numbers look like and how things work out. But it's not for me right now. I'll just tell you that.
Yeah. We've been doing our show from home, from our homes for the last 3 months. And, Nashville is a very vibrant downtown. The three of us work downtown a lot around Predators games and are downtown a lot. And, man, it's, the explosion of downtown Nashville in the last 5 years has been something to see, where it is always jam-packed. And when it became essentially a ghost town, it was weird. I mean, we were kind of harking back to, it looked like the scene 20, 25 years ago, downtown Nashville, if not longer. To see it now, it was just kind of eerie to see it. What was it like to see the Las Vegas Strip a ghost town?
Yeah, it's. I mean, you guys. I think when, as you're phrasing that, as you're putting it that way, it's kind of similar for us. I think, as most people can imagine, of, hey, we've got this very, very tourist area of the Strip that everybody knows about, and then the rest of the city is just a normal community. But for the Strip to be closed down is something. You know, I grew up here for the most part. I never thought that was going to be possible, even for a day, much less a couple of months. And for the Strip to turn into where all of us locals go to walk and, like, ride our bikes and just kind of, like, you know, explore in that way, like, I never thought that was something that would be possible. It was just such a weird thing to have these massive buildings that are world known. Like, everybody in the world knows what the Strip looks like and what it is and all these big hotels, and yet we're just walking by and riding our bikes down the Strip and, you know, getting our tourist photos that we never would get because we're never really down there as much. Just kind of, you know, using it as like a public space was a very, very weird thing for a while. And you know, at the same time, kind of depressing of knowing these buildings and, you know, how much money they make for the city and how much, you know, how many employees count on those places to be open, and to know that they're not open is just, it was just a really surreal feeling for a while. And I think you guys are about as close to understanding it as anybody else of having this thriving tourist area where there's usually people wall to wall, and all of a sudden nobody's there. It was very weird.
We're talking to Adam Hill out in Las Vegas and talking about the sports scene out there and just the overall scene of life of the businesses with the Las Vegas crew opening back up. So, Adam, as that relates to hockey, we're all curious. You know, we've heard strong rumors that Vegas is a place of interest, that the league would like to maybe send one of the groups of 12 teams out there. First, just give us your following of this. I mean, have you guys been privy to information that hasn't been out there? How optimistic are you that when it's all said and done, Vegas will be one of the two cities?
Yeah, I think it's something that the league wants, and it seems like Gary Bettman has fallen in love with this city, and to the point where, like, anything that comes up of, like, hey, where should we do this? Like, Vegas is always on the list, and I think always will be for a lot of reasons. I mean, first of all, the market has embraced hockey so much, and secondly, like, I think everybody, like Nashville, everybody wants to come to Vegas for anything. So if you're like, hey, we need to figure out where to do this hub city, Vegas makes some sense. I don't think it makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways. I mean, first of all, there's not a whole lot of sheets of ice available that are NHL level, where they would have to, you know, run practices and run games simultaneously and all these things that they're going to have to do for a hub city. And even the sheets that are available, you have to kind of travel to a little bit. So, you know, if you try to have a hub around, you know, New York, around where the T-Mobile Arena is, you can certainly play the games and you can play three or four games a day at T-Mobile, but then I guess you could set up one at MGM across the street where people could go to, but then another sheet would have to be out at City National Arena at the practice facility for the night. So I don't think it's ideal in that sense, where, like, in a place like Edmonton, where you could just have, you have that one city block that has a hotel with the arena with a couple of sheets of practice ice, like, that makes a lot of sense. But Vegas, of course, is just going to be in the mix for no other reason, because people are going to want to come to Vegas. I don't know if it works out. But then the next level is that it sounds like the NHL doesn't want to have teams hosting these hubs, which is a weird thing, because there's no home ice. There's not going to be fans there. So I guess if you were going to do the, you know, a hub city, you'd have to do the Eastern Conference teams in Vegas if the NHL doesn't want teams to host, which then that just doesn't make sense to me, that teams are going to be traveling that much. So we're hearing things here and there, but I just think that would be a real holdup if they don't want to have teams hosting. I don't think you would then ship Vegas to the Eastern Conference, so I think you'd have to ship the Eastern Conference teams all out to Vegas, which I think is just a big, you know, kind of yield sign for everything else pointing in the direction of Vegas. Edmonton makes a lot of sense to me. I've been up there so many times, it's awful, but hey, it's a perfect setup for this hub. But then, of course, you've got the, you know, the Canadian government kind of holding things up with, you know, forced quarantines and things that would have to happen there, plus all the travel logistical issues of crossing the border for everyone, you know, maybe a second time. I just think there's a lot of problems with each of the hub cities. I think in the end they'll try to make Vegas happen, because I think the NHL wants it so much, but that hosting thing is going to be the real holdup to me.
Yeah, I think you can see why the league is going to wait as long as they can, because I think they're trying to see where this thing goes. For example, I wonder, Adam, on shows like yours or the discussion out there, is there a, oh, no, you know, we can't blow this. We have a chance to get this, so we have to be smart. Because I wonder if there is a spike in cases or things like that, that would have to influence the league's decision, just like it would for any city, on where they send their players. True? Or do you think think the setup would be separate from that?
No, for sure. You're 100% right. And, like, as you mentioned, we just reopened. Everybody has seen this video that Arash posted from the Cosmo. It's like 10 million views now, so everybody has seen all the people here. Now, if we get spikes in cases, then all of a sudden I think Vegas drops down on the hub city list, and people are like, wait a minute, there's a spike in Vegas. It's not going to happen. You asked about our show. Me and my co-host Steve Cofield, we argue back and forth about this all the time. He thinks that Vegas should be at the forefront of trying to get all of these things, that we should have fought for the NBA, we should fight for the NHL, we should fight for all these different hub city locations. My take is, why? Like, what is the benefit to the city? You know, you could say, hey, listen, this is a time where we're reopening. Come out here to Vegas. It's a good place. It's a safe place. You know, get the tourism going again. But at the same time, if you don't have fans there, what is it telling fans? It's telling fans, like, oh, is it really safe to be out there? There's not even fans in the building. I don't know. I don't know what it does for the city, and I would like to know that before I started making pitches to get it here. So this is a running debate that we've had. Steve thinks we should try to get everything. I think, listen, there's no reason to me. I just don't understand why you fight to get something like this, what it does for the city. I don't know what it does. I could be wrong. I just don't think it does a whole lot if you have these games here and tell fans it's not safe to be there.
Adam, what did you think, or what has Vegas said about the format of, obviously they've earned a bye. They were red hot when play stopped. It looked like they were starting to click on all cylinders. They had made some nice additions. They looked like they were fortified for a good playoff run. Now the seed, I guess, could be changed a little bit depending on how they do in the three-game round robin. So did they like the format overall?
I think yes, for the most part. You know, you take away the ability to kind of just stay in the division, which I think they really wanted, because the division isn't too good. Because the way the playoffs are set up usually, they would really just have to kind of, they would think, beat teams out of their division and then make it to the Western Conference Finals. So that they took that away a little bit, but it does still give them a chance to earn the top seed, as you mentioned. And the biggest thing for Vegas, you mentioned that they were playing really well, that they were really starting to make a run. But the thing that's kind of overlooked is, just before the play went on pause, Vegas had two major injuries. Max Pacioretty and Mark Stone were both hurt, two of their best offensive players, and it wasn't clear that they were going to be ready for the playoffs. So the fact that this got delayed as much as it did will enable them to get to full strength. Now the question becomes, for all teams, you know, how quickly do you get back up to speed? How much does the layoff impact you? But I think on the surface, the fact that they're going to have Stone and Pacioretty healthy from this pause, so I think that they're pretty confident and comfortable with the fact that play got delayed for a while, and fans are excited that the team should technically be at full strength when everything does kick back off.
We're talking to Adam Hill. He is from the Vegas Review Journal and also co-host of Cofield and Company of ESPN Las Vegas. Now, Adam, as you know, there is a very, very large building that has been constructed or is still being constructed in your city that is supposed to house the now Las Vegas Raiders starting this season. There's all the talk of, will there be fans allowed at all to start the NFL season? You know, how many fans, if there are some? What's been the discussion around there about that brand new, very beautiful stadium and what it might look like when the Raiders come home and open up the home schedule of their season?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's a really cool building. I think people are excited to see it and excited to get inside there. No question about it. But there is some real apprehension about, you know, how many people will be there. As you mentioned, it will be 50%. Would they play with a full stadium, which it doesn't seem completely likely at this point? And then a lot of the discussion that people are having is about, you know, how much money was invested in PSLs here in Vegas, which was an insane amount. And then what, you know, what happens to those people who, you know, bought those because they wanted to, you know, they wanted to be able to buy season tickets, but they wanted to be able to go to all the games this year. And then, you know, how do you distribute between those, like this massive game that, that is going to be here this year with Tom Brady coming to Las Vegas with the Buccaneers to play the Raiders? You know, what if you invested, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars in PSLs and season tickets, and then they tell you, well, that game is not going to be part of your package. That's a huge, you know, discussion right now. That's a huge, you know, point of controversy for people. I think that everybody just wants to know, but they also understand that you're not going to know for a while. Like, no, there's no decisions made. The team, for their part, is publicly saying, hey, we're not even having those discussions. We're planning on playing with a full stadium, which is completely not true. They're having those discussions every day. They're having those meetings every day. How do you break it down? How do you decide who gets what tickets? How do you decide how many people could go in? All of those things are happening every day. Now, just down the road at the MGM, they had a conference call, you know, a couple weeks ago, and they said they don't foresee fans at their venues for the entire year. So that would include T-Mobile Arena, where the Golden Knights play, which is a kind of a stunning announcement. That would include some of their shows, and that's right across the street. So would it be much different at Allegiant? I think they're going to push for as many as they can, but I don't think anybody's operating under the assumption here that it's going to be a full stadium for this season, which is kind of, you know, sad for a lot of people who thought that, you know, this is going to be a massive success and, you know, people in every seat and just kind of, you know, making the city, you know, announce themselves to the NFL and how impressive the crowds were going to be. And, you know, I think everybody understands the circumstances, but at the same time, you know, they're looking at this and like, wow, we just invested in this big stadium, like right across the street from the Strip. And all of a sudden, you know, you're not going to be able to use it the way you hoped this season. You just hope that there's going to be as many fans as they could have safely in there and that everybody's safe, but at the same time, as many people can enjoy it as possibly can.
I do have one actual football question to ask you, because you cover the Raiders, and with them starting there, Marcus Mariota signs with the Las Vegas Raiders, and we all saw what happened here in Nashville last year with him. But I've said on these airwaves that I just see a scenario, because of how much John Gruden and Mike Mayock loved Marcus Mariota coming out of Oregon, that at some point this season he takes the starting job from Derek Carr. What do you think about that?
Well, I'll tell you this: if you follow the, you know, the betting market here at the Westgate in Las Vegas, it's kind of where they set a bunch of the numbers. They're kind of looked at as like the standard for odds making in Vegas. The numbers on Derek Carr for his season totals, like 3,000 yards, 17 touchdowns. I talked to them over there, and they were basing their numbers on Carr starting 12 games. So they're assuming that at some point it's not Derek Carr's job. Now, that's just a, you know, a working number that they're basing it on, but I think a lot of people put a lot of stock in what they say. I think it's very possible that Mariota could have the job. Now, the downside to that argument would be this weird offseason, him not being able to come in and actually work with the team, not actually be on the field with the receivers, working on the timing and that sort of thing. I think a lot of teams are going to be affected by that, and in particular the newcomers to a team, and that would absolutely be highlighted by quarterbacks. I mean, it's going to be really tough for quarterbacks that are just coming into a system or just coming into a team to get up to that level without actually working on the field with these guys until training camp. So that would be the downside. Derek Carr going into his third year in the system, you know, comfortable with the players and that sort of thing. So that's Carr's advantage to me. But I'll tell you this, if they, you know, this is Derek Carr's make or break year for the Raiders. If it's not this year, I think they move on from him, and I think next year it becomes much easier contract-wise to move on from him. So if they're, you know, 10, 11 games into the season, and they're convinced Carr is not the guy, I absolutely think they would say, listen, we'll see if Mariota's the guy. We'll give him the chance. I think that they would absolutely make a decision to do that, just to see what they have in Mariota, because as you said, the front office loves Mariota. Gruden has really raved about him in the past, so I think they at least want to find out what they have in him, and they'll do that if they're convinced that Carr is not going to be the guy going forward after 2020.
I know this weekend too, and I watched it, Dana White and the UFC had UFC 250 from their Apex facility in Las Vegas after getting the approval to do that event. That's their training facility. It looks like an awesome place that we saw on TV. But what did you think about them being able to pull that off and put that on at their own facility and continue what Dana White has done over the last few months of keeping the UFC going?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was only one of only three media in the building, and that was the second one I've done there. And then I was actually in Jacksonville for their cards as well. So I've kind of seen their progress here. They're getting better and better at putting on these shows with no fans. This is a production facility that was built to do fights with no fans, which is crazy because they never thought it would be because of a pandemic. They thought it would be so they could do a whole bunch of different fight cards just for TV. And it just so happened that this facility opened up at a perfect time for them to be able to do this. It works a lot better at that facility than it did in Jacksonville. When you have all these empty seats in this big arena, you just have this small, like basically soundstage that's kind of perfect for doing these fights. So I think it's working out well. Their protocols are getting stricter and better in my mind. I've had to go through all the testing, and so I've kind of experienced with the fighters exactly, you know, everything that they're doing. I think they're, you know, they're getting better and better at it. And I think the product is looking better. I think you're noticing it less and less that there's no fans there. You know, the thing for the UFC is they're kind of getting at this crossroads of all these fighters right now are saying, wait a minute, we're putting on these fights. We're putting ourselves in danger. You're reaping all the rewards and we're really not. So a lot of fighters now are talking about money, and I think it's going to be bubbling over a little bit more. But as far as just the product goes, I think they're kind of doing really well right now with putting these shows on with no fans.
Yep, I've seen that. In fact, I saw that on Saturday. And I would advise those fighters to go back and look at the history of last 20 years of how that's worked out, them going up against Dana White in the UFC, asking for more money and talking about it publicly. I'm just saying. I'm just throwing that out there. Hasn't usually worked out well for the fighters.
You're absolutely right. But there's some weird things in action right now because ESPN has so much control over the product now. And ESPN was putting fighters on the air talking about money during this card on Saturday, which was very strange to some people. But the UFC gets a lot of money from ESPN, and ESPN can now have some authority over, hey, listen, don't let these guys get away. Like, we're paying for the product. You better get these guys under contract and get them out fighting, where it doesn't matter. Like, it's a very weird thing, but Dana White doesn't care right now who the fights are. He just wants to have fights to fulfill a contract. But ESPN is saying, wait a minute, get these stars in there because we're buying the product from you. So UFC than anybody has could be dangerous. Why this is different now. It's definitely something to watch. It's something we could probably do like an hour on, but I know most people don't care, but this is a very, very different situation than it has been in the past for the UFC.
Well said. It's a fascinating topic. Leave us with this with a yes or no, Adam. Is Vegas one of the two hubs for the NHL?
Yes.
All right. Good stuff. Hey, really appreciate the visit. Thanks for doing this. We'll talk to you down the road.
Sure. Anytime. I love your city, by the way. So anytime I get to visit, it's great.
Well, we love yours too. So that we've got mutual feelings about each other's cities. Thanks for doing this, Adam.
Keep Steve in line.
Of course. I'll try.
He's with the Review Journal, covers the Raiders, also with Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas. He's Adam Hill, and he was our guest. Lots to digest there. We'll come back and discuss. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Hey, you can stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app. That's free and easy. Enable Alexa Skill or Google Home and ask it to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. Really good stuff there from Adam Hill, and it was pretty interesting to hear him talk about Vegas possibly being a hub city. At first, I didn't think he was actually selling it very well, like it was really a good idea to make it a hub city. And then at the end, I asked him yes or no, will Vegas be one of the hub cities? And he said yes. So I still feel like it's going to be yes. But I guess that is kind of like the last of the few pieces for the NHL to unveil, right?
Yeah, and I think, too, it just goes along the lines. I mean, we ask these questions all the time. What do you think's going to happen? And what do you want to happen and feel should happen, and sometimes they're two different answers. So I think he looks at it that way of it may not be the best idea, but at the end of the day, that's probably what ends up happening just because the NHL and the city, they're going to get what they want. So that's how I took it.
But wouldn't you be concerned, and I think he was sort of making that point when I asked about it, is, you know, if you do have huge crowds of people, you are running the risk of a big spike in cases, right? If nothing else, I mean, we certainly hope it doesn't happen, but those casinos inside, those are not conducive to, you know, it's the precise environment that is conducive to spreading stuff, right? At least on,
sure.
That's what I would think, you know, based on everything we've learned the last few months. But, you know, how does that affect or not affect what Vegas has proposed to the league, right? If all the players are going to be in these hotels, isolated for the most part, going from the hotel to the rink, does it even matter what's going on in the city? I don't know. I'm throwing that out there because I don't know the answer.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah, and I mean, like, would you – I mean, you have 12 teams, so, I mean, do you get one hotel? I assume that's the plan, that you work a deal with one hotel, and that becomes the hub. So that's kind of what we've been talking about. So then what is that? You know, you have some restaurants in the hotel that are servicing the players. I mean, there's a lot of logistics. And that's not just for Vegas. That goes anywhere. So that's some questions I still have that haven't really been answered, and I guess will be at some point. But for a place like Vegas, I mean, let's say you know, if they stay at the – he was saying New York is right by – you know, right by the arena. So you stay at New York, you know, what does that mean for things that are attached to it? What does that mean for the casino? I mean, if you make that the hub, you got to keep as many people out from the outside as possible. So there's just a lot with it that I think are already there with other places, but even more so with Vegas.
I mean, the last two weekends in this city, there's been thousands of people gathered in one concentrated area for two weekends in a row. How does that affect our city? Is that why Davidson County is still in phase two?
We won't know for a couple weeks, really.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know the answer. I mean, that you bring up we brought up what the casinos look like. If you haven't seen the viral video, I mean, it was pretty packed, and it didn't look like the patrons were wearing masks.
Viva Las Vegas. That's what it looked like.
The employees were, but, you know, it's just like, you know, gatherings here. I mean, thousands of people, and some were wearing masks, some weren't. So what's... you know, what's the after effects of that? That's been two weekends in a row. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I know it's two scenes you go, ooh, you know, would like to see everybody maybe social distance a little bit better, which wasn't going on in either place, here or in the casino, and like to see a lot more masks. So I don't know. I don't know what the fallout is from that, if any. I mean, there's going to be something, I would think. If so, if not, then man, this is good. I mean, we're headed in the right direction, but I don't know if I believe that. In fact, I don't believe that.
Yeah, how many more weeks do you think can go by before the NHL is going to need to make a commitment to the two cities? One more week, two more weeks.
I was to say it's got to be soon.
End of the month.
I can't imagine. I mean, I guess, but I would think it's coming before the end of the month.
I kind of feel like next week. That's midway. That's, you know, next Monday is the 15th. So I feel like around there. And I mean, because the NBA, and I know you don't want to live by, well, just because somebody else is doing it doesn't mean we have to follow suit. But the NBA has a plan, and we know dates, and I mean, we got the plan. So I kind of feel like the NHL is getting to that point where they need to have that, have dates, have the cities in place, have the full plan. So I would feel like if it's not by next week, then that's pushing it, in my opinion.
I would say third week of this month, the latest. So I guess in the next 2 weeks will be what I expect them to do. Although, if you've already narrowed it down, when you come up with a list, don't you kind of already have a pretty good idea
I would think so.
Of where you're leaning,
privately.
Right?
Yes.
And that list of 10 has been out there for how long now?
11, wow. I think, right?
Was it 11?
Was it 11 cities?
Yeah, it may be.
Whatever.
But it's been out there
10,
for what?
Whatever.
2 or 3 weeks? I've lost all track of time.
That's what I was going to say. It's been at least 2 weeks, right?
I mean, I saw Robbie Stanley put a tweet up about the Winter Classic, and he said, you know, 40 years ago. That's what it feels like. So I've lost all track of time, but I think it's been like 2 or 3 weeks.
I think it was 10.
Right. The phase two is starting now, which is, you know, that's the next step. Players working out in small groups on the ice. They can skate. So that's a good sign. But I do think it's an interesting question to ponder is when they put the 11 cities out, when Commissioner Bettman came out, made that announcement 7-10 days ago, whatever it was, does he know that is going to be it? Like in his mind, he's got priorities 1 through 11, you know, based on what he sees happening there and what could change. Obviously the caseload can change, but it could change their mind and move them in a different direction. But I think the process would be something I would love to know on how they're coming around to getting it from 11 to 2.
I that's one of those I'd love to be a fly on the wall, like Darren says. I mean, I can't imagine the process, because you got to talk to the cities. Okay, give us the lay of the land of what's happening there. What policies are in place? Where do you see this going? And I almost feel like that has to be at least a, if not a daily, but a couple times a week conversation.
I mean, did they add a city? Because I don't remember 11. I remember 10. There was
I thought it was 10.
Three cities in Canada and 7 here. I don't remember. Did they add a city? I don't remember.
I thought there were 8.
No, there were 7.
Cities.
I know there were 7 U.S. and 3. The original 10, the original list that came out was, I remember, 7 U.S. cities and 3 in Canada. Toronto, Vancouver.
10 cities. Chicago, Columbus,
Edmonton.
Dallas, Edmonton, Vegas, Los Angeles, Minneapolis, Pittsburgh, Toronto, Vancouver. 10.
So when you come out with 10, I mean, I know it's, you know, you're eliminating 8 potential hubs, but you still have to kind of have an idea, right? You may have been 10 to kind of cast a bigger net out there to show that, you know, you're giving a lot of folks the opportunity. You were kind of going to mull over everything and see what made sense. But to me, you kind of have to have an idea. Like, you kind of know probably who are the favorites. So I don't know how much more time. I mean, it's been probably 2 weeks at least. So I can't imagine you needing a month to figure it out. Maybe I'm wrong, but I have to believe that that's going to get whittled down to the 2 here in the next week or two, I would think.
Well,
I would hope.
You guys mentioned, you know, Vegas, the hospitality part of it. They have these giant hotels. You could literally put all 12 teams in the same hotel and have them in different areas where they probably wouldn't run into each other very much. But, and especially if you spread them out 3 or 4 hotels, you'd still be in fairly close proximity to the rinks. But then you get into other things like, okay, how do you feed everybody? Are they allowed to go to restaurants? Can they even go to the casinos?
I mean, yeah,
I was
Vegas.
It's
going
to be tempting
that.
to walk out of the, you know, your room and go down to a casino if it's open. I don't know what the rules are there and whether that's a good idea or not. And then as Adam, our guest, pointed out, how many real sheets of ice do you have for these 12 teams to practice? You know, that's a big factor for sure, as opposed to Edmonton, which probably has a lot more sheets of ice readily available. Minnesota, the same thing. So I don't know what the priorities are, right? Is the media and size of the city, the you know, how the games are going to be covered, is that a factor at all? Or is it just simply the practical part of proximity to the rink, ice, food, all of that stuff?
Yeah, it's all.
It's a great question.
The casino part, I mean, that's one of the first things I thought of, naturally. But that, you know, okay, you're there, you're staying in one, are you allowed to go? I mean, people are going to be there, they're open. You know, or is it literally, okay, everybody, we're going to line up in the hallway and we're going to stay single file, go down the elevator to the bus, don't make eye contact with anybody. You know, what is it going to be? So those are some questions that I'm ready to be answered and hope get answered soon.
I don't think the teams are going to want to be around each other, right? They're going to want to have their space as they're preparing, especially the team that they're going to play in a playoff series. I wouldn't think they would want to be in the same hotel, even if it is a really big hotel.
So you're thinking Roman Yossi and Patrick Kane aren't going to go play golf together the night before they play, if they play?
And smoke cigars?
Smoke cigars.
Probably
well,
not.
Just think about the mentality of, like, some college football teams who, you know, they're playing. I remember with the Vanderbilt team, I traveled a couple years as the sideline reporter. The football team would stay, like, an hour's drive away from the campus that they're going to play on. Like, why do you not? Why aren't we staying any closer to this? But that's what sort of that mentality is. You want to be away from, you know, they don't want to have anybody around from the other team or something. I don't know where that comes from.
All right, we will come back and close up shop on this Monday afternoon here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well, I guess Chase really wants to talk about this topic. I mean, it evidently is just, he's so excited about it that the rundown consisted of this topic, and now he wants to bring it to Darren, Donick, and Chase. So, Chase, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I wanted to get your guys' opinion on this because Ryan and Marquise and I had fun this morning discussing it, and I figured this was right up your alley. But this so basically a player that you just couldn't stand, you absolutely despised for however long it was, but later on in their career – maybe you softened up a little bit and you either liked them or just learned to respect them. And you can even take it the other way, a player that you liked and then hated later on. What started this for me was a few weeks ago, I was watching the NASCAR race, and Jeff Gordon is a part of the Fox Sports team now. And I could not stand Jeff Gordon growing up, like absolutely hated him. I was an Earnhardt fan, and Jeff Gordon in the 24, Hendrick Motorsports, I didn't want anything to do with them because of that was the rivalry for me. And even after Dale's passing, you know, a Dale Jr. fan, just didn't like Jeff Gordon. But later on, and especially when Dale Jr. joined Hendrick Motorsports, I softened up on that and had a respect for Jeff Gordon. I didn't cheer for him to win races necessarily, but I just had a little more of a respect factor. In his last year, you know, I did pull for him to go out on top and as one of the greatest of all time. So that's what started it for me. I don't know. I also used Derek Jeter as an example because I hated the Yankees, but softened up and respected Derek Jeter later on. So I don't know how you guys would answer it, but we had a lot of fun with it this morning.
I got one. I definitely thought of Andre Agassi on that. I just thought when he came up, he was cocky, the long hair, the image is everything. So commercial, immature, and I was like, man, I just can't stand this guy. I couldn't root for him. But as he got older and he matured, I thought he became much more likable. And you know, I was never like a huge Agassi fan, but I respected him a lot. There were matches where I would root for him way, way more, where that was not the case when he first came up. So that's one example that came to mind for me.
I'm sitting here thinking, Jay, I don't have an answer right now. I guess I haven't put any thought into it, but nothing is just jumping out at me. Because you just brought this
up during the break.
The
obvious ones would be somebody, like if you're a fan of a team and you've played against somebody and then that person gets traded to your team.
Yep. And that's what I'm trying to go through my head.
That's an easy one that usually happens.
Well, it's not always your team, too. Here was one that Ryan brought up, and then a lot of other people chimed in on him, too. And it could be different in this market, but Peyton Manning, because Peyton Manning was in the division with the Titans for so long that, and I know some people chose Peyton Manning because they were Vols fans and they chose him and the Colts over the Titans. But I know Ryan used that as an example. When Peyton left Indy and went to Denver, his feelings for Peyton Manning changed a lot because he wasn't in the division anymore. He wasn't considered a rival, but I mean, you had so many battles between the Titans and the Colts. You had Steve McNair and Peyton Manning have to share the MVP that year. So I could understand him being one of those, and I felt that way because he was somebody that I remember growing up in this state when he played at Tennessee and then going to the Colts. It was like, ugh, this guy, can't stand this guy being in the division. But then he goes to Denver, and the feelings change. So that was an example that came up this morning. You know, Eli Manning for somebody was one that liked him, you know, when he was at Ole Miss, but Cowboys fan, didn't like him in the division. So you got nothing, Darren.
I got nothing. It's rare that I got nothing. And I just can't think of anything right now. Nothing. The people I usually don't like are the people I still don't like.
So let me ask it this way, because this was another
changed.
This was another angle that came up. A player that you hate from another team, but if they were on your team, you would like them because of how they play. They're that just, you know, they're disturbed. Like, for instance, Jordan Tutu, when he was with the Predators, I think there were other fan bases that hated him, but they understood what kind of role he played, and if he was on their team, they'd like him.
Well, there's a ton of hockey players that fit that description, for sure.
I said Kessler, which I know is an unpopular answer, but I said Ryan Kessler.
You said Ryan Kessler as in what?
If he had been a Predator in his prime, I mean, I would have liked him. I know other teams would have hated him.
Right, that's a different
yeah,
topic.
That's not the
you're
way
going
to go
down
that,
a
yeah,
different
you're going a
road.
Different path
it's that's that. Not that's not what you asked. You asked if you had that. That to me is a totally separate topic. So I just can't think of anything where it's actually happened where somebody I didn't like and then I started to like over time because of whatever fill in the blank. I don't know. I'm trying to.
Or even the other way around. Somebody you liked, and then for whatever reason, you know, like Marquise brought up.
I mean, a perfect guy is Albert Bell. Like, you like him when he was on your team. You didn't like him at all when he wasn't on your team.
Sure. I thought of Johnny Damon going from the Red Sox to the Yankees, and depending on which side you're on that rivalry, it's going to work one way or the other, right? I mean, he's a flamboyant, stylish player that I'm sure when he's playing for your rival, you're like, I hate that guy. But now he's on your team. Oh, yeah, you know, that's just natural. But I thought of Agassi because that's more of a mature, right? He kind of wins you over time. I think those are the best examples of that. Maybe it comes with maturity and appreciation. Because somebody maybe has grown out of some characteristics that you didn't like.
I didn't bring this up this morning, but on the other side of it, of somebody that I really, really liked and then didn't like for a while, and I've told him this, and he's one of my favorite people now, was D-Mace. When D-Mace went to the Ravens, I was not happy about it, and I was not a D-Mace fan for a while. Because, and I, you know, I understood the situation. It was obviously, it wasn't his choosing. It was a salary cap thing, but to go to the Ravens, it was McNair. I mean, that hurt. I mean, that hurt a lot. Like, the Ravens? So it's, you know, but that's team loyalties coming in play.
Yeah.
So it was just fun.
I'm amazed that I can't really
I'm
think
surprised.
Of, I don't know.
Well, we got a
Derek
text.
Jeter has got to be another one, right? I think you mentioned him that it was hard for him not to, even if you couldn't stand the Yankees. And you know, we know about the Yankees. Either you love the Yankees or you are rooting against the Yankees in most cases, right? But it was hard not to appreciate Derek Jeter, even if you couldn't. You know, when he first came
Mariano
up,
Rivera.
Mariano Rivera is probably in the same category too. You couldn't help but be won over by those guys and how they played and how they carried themselves.
Sure. And I thought Marquise bringing up LeBron, you know, that was – LeBron was
LeBron
like
the, was is probably the best example of people have gone from love to hate to love, and there's like a lot of emotions around LeBron.
He's a wrestler.
Sure.
He goes babyface to heel turn to back to babyface to now he's kind of a tweener. You don't really know what he is.
That's probably a pretty good analogy. I'm not really up to speed on the wrestling world, but I know enough to know that's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, because when he went to Miami, it's like, oh, he's the bad guy now. You know, he's turned. It's like when Hulk Hogan joined the NWO and became a bad guy. I mean, that's exactly what it was. But then he goes, oh, he comes to his senses and he goes home and wins a championship. Because I know, like, and I didn't have a dog in the hunt. I wasn't really a big fan, NBA fan. But when he went back to Cleveland, I pulled for them to win a championship. Like, that's what he went to do. So that was kind of one of those situations.
I hate to admit it, but usually I feel like I'm almost stumped on this, the fact that I don't have anything.
I'm surprised.
Dad,
I figure you would.
I don't know. I don't know why not. It's a good question, though, and there were some really good answers. Just I was not a part of that. I did not help the discussion piece at all.
It's okay.
That'll do it for us. We're out of here on this Monday afternoon. Everybody have a great rest of your day. Be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.